Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's going to be a whopper of a Wednesday edition. I got Evan with me right here in the world's headquarters. You know, a little under the weather, but doing his best. Evan, appreciate you showing up, man, because Fancy Bryant's in the happiest place on earth. You know, second happiest, right next to being here on the radio with me. So anyways, Fancy, I hope you're enjoying your vacation. And he'll be back next week. But this is an extremely big show. And I say that often, but today I mean it. Here's why. Former U.S. Senator Al Franken joining me in like 23 minutes on the airwaves. Al Franken, the only former U.S. Senator on tour. It's coming to the Barrymore Theater in Madison Friday night. Al Franken coming to the airwaves, joining me at 3:30. I'm pretty excited. And then Charles Franklin of the Marquette University Law School fame. Charles is a pollster extraordinaire, and he is going to drop the newest Wisconsin numbers at 4:30. And then we've got Ben Franklin joining live via Ouija board, just to see if anyone's paying attention. Apparently Evan was. He noted. No, Ben Franklin. That's a little bit of a joke. Ha ha. Dom at 5 in the Happier Happy Hour. You can always be a part of the big program. Join us. 844-967-2789. Let's talk about the politicking going on. And we've talked a lot about the audio tapes. Lordy, there's tapes of Kevin McCarthy. And he's kind of brave with the Republican caucus leadership behind closed doors. His reaction to the January 6th. And I mean, hell, he called out a couple of his caucus, specifically, I think it was Matt Gaetz and Mo Brooks, said, you know, these guys are dangerous. Maybe these guys should be taken off Twitter, kind of like the former president was, you know, before they get somebody hurt. Hell, Steve Scalise reportedly said something to the effect, you know, the pressure he's exerting, Matt Gaetz specifically, upon Liz Cheney, hell, that might be illegal. You think? So, the latest on the Matt Gaetz, and, you know, this banter has been going around, and we have a quote from the local congressman, Glenn Grothman. Can't wait to share that one with you. House Republicans, here's the headline at thehill.com this hour. House Republicans give McCarthy a standing ovation, and they brush off the tapes. You know, because they don't believe tapes, apparently. Wait for Grothman's quote. Let me start here. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy got a standing ovation in a Wednesday House GOP conference meeting. The caucus loves his ass. After he addressed leaked recordings of his comments in the aftermath of January 6th, according to members and sources in the room. I was not there. I'll have to take it from anonymous sources. The action from McCarthy's colleagues marks the clearest symbol yet that the revelation may not have hurt his chances at taking the speaker's gavel if Republicans win the House. Well, let's see if we can prevent that. Now, McCarthy told members that the damning quotes from January 10th, 2021 leadership call, during which he said he would suggest former President Donald Trump resign if impeached, and wondered if GOP members could be kicked off social media, were simply the leader speculating on different scenarios. A little speculation. According to Rep. Robert Adderholt of Alabama, Republican, again, this is their caucus. Here's the quote. He just said that we're going to lay out different things of what could be. At this point, you know, I take his word for it. Well, the other day he lied, right? He said, oh, I never told Trump he should resign. And then the authors, you know, new book, and apparently they got tape. They had tape. They had literal tape, and they dropped it the next day. And Kevin McCarthy, you know, proven a bold-faced liar. And he came out yesterday, if my memory serves, and McCarthy said, well, you know, I only suggested I might do that. I never actually asked the former president to resign. Well, clearly you lack courage, sir. Anyways, back to this, because I want to get to Grothman here soon. The message during the Wednesday meeting was that Republicans need to keep pressing forward with what they're doing to win control of the chamber after the election. Even the conference's most conservative members said that their constituents are more concerned about high food and gas prices than what McCarthy said, and saw news of McCarthy's comments as an attempt to divide the conference. I'd like to divide their conference, surely. Several members added that they had not listened to the tapes. Oh, I don't need to know. I'm going to keep my head in the sand. You know, better to not know. Isn't that what they used to do with Trump's tweets? Oh, I hardly even looked. Did he say something? I'm unaware. Can't comment. That's what they used to say. Here are some of the current quotes. Here's one from Rep. Barry Loudermilk. Loudermilk. Not quieter milk. Loudermilk from Georgia. This is a distraction, folks. Come on. This is simply a distraction by the left trying to drive a wedge in a very unified Republican Party in a very unified conference. Oh, they're unified. Here's Congressman Glenn Grothman, as the former president used to call him, and he just let him do it. The Trumpiest of all the congressmen, he was voted, literally, Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. Grothman's actually his name, but, you know, Trump called him Grothman. So he called himself Grothman, seemed like for a while, but anyways. Grothman said he had not listened to the audio and warned that not everything in the newspaper can be believed. Unless you're a member of the press, nobody gives a damn about January 6th, Grothman said. Nobody cares. I don't even know why we have these conversations. A little bit more here. Not every member was willing to completely brush off the tapes. Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene said that she spoke in the conference meeting and hoped to see McCarthy and Minority Whip Steve Scalise will apologize for their comments about Rep. Matt Gaetz. How dare they cast aspersions at Matt Gaetz, the one that's accused of trying to, what, turn a mob against his colleague, Liz Cheney, in a perhaps illegal or dangerous fashion. Here's what Marjorie, or what we call her, Perjorie Taylor Greene. All we need to be accountable for our words. I've had to do that before, and that we need to apologize when we say something wrong. Oh, yeah, you not so good on the apology part, Perjorie Taylor Greene. Greene said that it was hurtful to hear McCarthy suggest members be removed from social media, but said his team has been helpful in assisting her with Twitter after her personal account was banned from the platform. So McCarthy's trying to get her back on, I guess. A lot of this stuff is just drama that the American people don't care about, Greene said. Heard her on Righty Whitey Talk Radio today, Perjorie Taylor Greene, over on Clay and Buck. Anyways, one last quote. Matt Gaetz, you know, he stood accused of perhaps targeting violence against his colleague, Liz Cheney. Here's what he had to say. Gaetz was less forgiving and said he confronted Scalise in the meeting, asking for reasoning behind his comment that calling Rep. Liz Cheney anti-Trump was illegal. He didn't have one. It was pathetic, Gaetz told The Hill. I think it was a little worse than that, Gaetz, but whatever. McCarthy had said Gaetz was putting people in jeopardy with his remarks following the riot. He was particularly concerned with the comments the Florida Republican made about Liz Cheney. According to the Times, she had already taken heat from Trump supporters after being critical of the then president. Well, let me bring you, fine audience, with me to a little article. Greg Sargent, the plumb line at the Washington Post. This one about Tucker rhymes with Tucker Carlson over at the Foxy News. And the headline here, what Tucker Carlson's fury at Kevin McCarthy says about the GOP. And Evan, do we have this sound? I think there's still time to play it. Let's play a little snippet of what Tucker rhymes with Tucker had to say on the Foxy News last night. Play for the people.
And Kevin McCarthy of California told his close friend Liz Cheney that he hoped the social media companies would censor more conservative Republicans in Congress. Donald Trump, the sitting president, had already been silenced by those companies, but McCarthy wanted the tech oligarchs to do more, to force disobedient lawmakers off the internet. Quote, quote, can't they take their Twitter accounts away too? Those are the tape-recorded words of Congressman Kevin McCarthy, a man who in private turns out sounds like an MSNBC contributor. And yet, unless conservatives get their act together right away, Kevin McCarthy or one of his highly liberal allies, like Elise Stefanik, is very likely to be Speaker of the House in January. That would mean we will have a Republican Congress led by a puppet of the Democratic Party. So you wouldn't know any of this. And Kevin McCarthy...
Ooh, that's got to sting a little. Kevin McCarthy is a puppet of the Democratic Party. Tucker rhymes with Tucker, Carlson said on Fox News. Now, I thought this was a unified caucus. You know, giving the standing O to Kevin McCarthy. Not for his courage, of course, because he didn't actually, according to him, ask the former president to resign. So they're not saluting his courage. It's not because he did the right thing. The right thing, of course, in their mind is minimizing the January 6th. Moving on from the January 6th. Not holding any of his caucus terribly accountable, certainly. Hell, man, get them back their Twitter accounts if you can. So we're going to come back. More conversation about Kevin McCarthy. And you cannot call yourself a unified caucus if you don't have the support of Foxy News. Come back with us. Al Franken joining me very soon. I'm very excited. Al Franken, first time I've ever had the former senator on the big show. If you want tickets for Friday night, you better call the Barrymore Theater. I think they were nearly out. They may be out. I'm not sure if there are any tickets left. But Al Franken coming to the Barrymore Friday night, the only former senator on tour. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. It will be a whopper of a Wednesday edition.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a hump day, a whopper of a Wednesday edition. Al Franken joining me in about 10 minutes. Stick around for him. But topically, I want to talk about Tucker rhymes with Tucker Carlson. And he got just furious last night talking about Kevin McCarthy. And Greg Sargent over here at the Washington Post, sharing a little of this article with you, the plumb line. He's got a few opinions to offer. Once again, leaked audio was captured of House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy privately admitting the truth about the dangers posed by Donald Trump in the MAGA movement. Only this time the leak has triggered, as it were, Tucker Carlson's fury. In the latest installment, the California Republican worried just after the insurrectionist violence that Trump's allies in the House might incite violence against other lawmakers. This comes after leaked audio of McCarthy suggesting he might call on Trump to resign over the coup attempt.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that.
I read on. In both cases, McCarthy never acted on his fears. You know, that's so courageous, Kevin. Which is reviving a familiar argument from commentators. The Republicans fully understand the threat that Trump poses, but are too cowardly to do anything about it. As Sargent writes, this is partly true, but it misses another part of the story. I'm talking about the degree to which Republicans have refrained from holding Trump and his allies accountable for their crimes against democracy for cynical instrumental purposes, as an affirmative act designed to accomplish a concrete end, keeping his voters engaged and in the GOP coalition. Carlson's angry rant on Foxy News about McCarthy on Tuesday night helps illustrate the contours of this. What enraged Carlson was McCarthy's suggestion on the audio that Twitter perhaps should have canceled GOP reps for trafficking in rhetoric that might result in violence. You heard the sound. Can't they take their Twitter accounts away too? McCarthy wondered aloud. Kevin McCarthy is a puppet of the Democratic Party, roared Tucker in response. Carlson lambasted McCarthy for wanting social media companies to censor more conservative Republicans. He called on conservatives to get their act together to prevent McCarthy from becoming the next House Speaker. He is in line, or at least the party would seem to indicate, if they win the House, Kevin McCarthy's their guy, saying they should not be satisfied with his leadership. I wouldn't be. What's key here is Carlson's effort to mobilize conservative voters against the GOP leadership and McCarthy in particular. This might fail. McCarthy seems to have solid support in the GOP conference. Hell, he got a standing O today, right, folks? But he does not, he does have to worry about efforts to turn millions of Trump voters against him with charges of disloyalty to Trump and the MAGA movement. That's all they've got, really. They've got a big lie. But the big lie is terribly engaging of the base. So you got to keep telling the big lie. Let me read on. What McCarthy seems to have discovered soon after the Capitol riot is that to avoid antagonizing or alienating those voters, he must, above all, refrain from treating that event as an extremely grave moment requiring a serious political response. This isn't what McCarthy thought at the outset. Traitor to Trump that he is, he initially seemed genuinely appalled by the horrifying and deadly violence and possibility of more to come. For instance, on the latest audio, McCarthy said several days after the attack that far-right lawmakers were putting people in jeopardy with incendiary attacks on Rep. Liz Cheney for thinking Trump should be held accountable for the violence. McCarthy also seemed sincerely rattled that writers brought rope by the number of House Republicans that attended the rally. Soon after, of course, McCarthy realized the error of his ways and has spent the last year minimizing and helping to cover up those events. This is what gets widely denounced as cowardice, with the claim usually being that GOP leaders would like Trump to disappear, but they won't say so. Let me pull this one down closer to conclusion. I want you to hear the end part here. Nicole Hemmer, the author of Partisans, A New History of the GOP, notes a tension here. After tolerating extremes, let's just say, these elites sometimes did try to purge them from the conservative movement. It's the same movement that embraced Joe McCarthy. It's the same movement that accepted the John Birchers, right? Because it motivated the base. It turned people out to vote. And Republicans in this day and age cannot win elections without the lunatic fringe. A little bit more here from Greg Sargent's piece. But elites often faced extreme blowback for it, Hemmer said. This led them to the realization you can't purge your base since the GOP needs these people to win elections, and that's where the energy in the party is. In this sense, Hemmer notes, McCarthy's handling of this situation and Carlson's attacks on him over his perceived lapse into taking January 6th seriously are not outside the historical norm for the GOP. A little bit more. A quote. McCarthy has a genuine, visceral reaction to the events of January 6th. Republicans who pointed to January 6th and said, this is an outrage, found themselves in the midst of pretty overwhelming backlash. As a result, Hemmer noted, McCarthy learned very quickly that the base didn't have a problem with January 6th, leading Republicans to continue to downplay these horrors. You can call that cowardice if you want. I'd say it's a whole lot worse. So did you catch all that? Republicans have done the calculus. The fringe is their base. Those that would advocate for violence, those that would, hell, turn on their own, that's their base. That's what they want. And you can't turn on the base. You can't chop off the cancerous arm because the arm is half the body, or at least a part of the body. You know what I'm saying? You cannot get rid of the horror of this Republican Party because you can't win elections without them. So Tucker's outraged, not because, you know, Kevin McCarthy got caught on tape saying some things. Kevin McCarthy got outraged. Ah, damn it, man. I'm screwing up the math here. Let's just turn to what comes next. I talked about it a lot. You know, I feel like it's still a Monday. Monday mouth anyways. Al Franken is next. He is a fine humorist. He is the only former U.S. senator on tour. Tour! Right now, he's coming to the Barrymore Theater this Friday night. Check with them if you would like to see Al live. But if you want to hear him, stick around. He's next on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Everybody's disappointed with you, Kevin McCarthy.
The Devil's Advocates, making radio great again.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's going to be a whopper of a Wednesday edition. I got a big guest joining me live via phone right now. He is Al Franken. Al, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Al, I understand you're on a tour. The only former U.S. senator on tour or something of that sort. Al, you're coming to Madison, Wisconsin. The Barrymore Theater Friday night. I'd tell people to call for tickets. I think you might be sold out, Al. People love you here.
Well, I think it's very close to that, so hurry if you want to. I think, we're very close to sold out, but... There, as of yesterday, there were some tickets left. It was not many.
Al, what's the nature of the show Friday night? This tour you're on, I assume some humor, some satire. What's the nature of the performance you put on, sir?
Well, it's stand-up comedy. It is. There's a lot of politics and a lot of political satire. I'm a big fan. I've always been a big fan of stand-up. I started in the show business with a partner, Tom Davis. We were two of the original SNL writers, and we met in high school and did stand-up together. But we were a team and did a very different thing than, you know, monologists do. And I've been kind of working on this for quite a while, and it's comedy. It's comedy. It's laughs. But as everyone can imagine, it has a lot of politics in it, and a lot of my experiences from the Senate, including with Ron Johnson. And so I'll be talking about him. But it's comedy. It's comedy. It's laughs.
Well, Al, I've got to ask you, what has your experience with my pal Ron Johnson here in the state of Wisconsin? He used to come on my little liberal talk radio show, Al, like 25 times. I've had lots of cracks at this guy, and we've made lots of news on him. He didn't know the drinking age. Hell, there's lots of stuff that Ron Johnson doesn't know. But what's your impression of the man?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me. He didn't seem to know a lot. When he was in the Senate, when McCain did that thumbs down on the save the ACA, a couple weeks later, Ron Johnson went on some Wisconsin radio show and said the reason that McCain had put the thumbs down was that it was because of his brain cancer, that he was addled. And at this time, John was very sick, and he had, after that vote, gone back to Arizona, and I didn't know whether I was going to see him again. So I told John that I was going to write him a bad news, good news joke. Every week, and the bad news part of it was always the bad news: you have brain cancer. The good news is, and then so after Johnson did that, I wrote the bad news is you have brain cancer. The good news is that Ron Johnson's ass cancer has moved to his mouth.
Folks, you are... I'm sorry to interrupt, folks. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, no. It's just, thank God. Well, and then John, I didn't know if I was going to see him again. He came back one more time, and when he came back, he came into the chamber. He saw me. He pointed at me. He said, "That man earned every cent he ever made, not here, but at Saturday Night Live." He was an amazing guy, and Johnson's just an idiot. And also, he just spouts nonsense, and you guys got to beat him. You got to beat him.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I've got a fine guest live via phone. He is Al Franken, humorist, former U.S. Senator, and Al, they're listening to you on KTNF AM 950 in Minneapolis right now. We're live right there. But Al, they miss you right in politics, I suspect. Do you ever miss politics, sir?
Well, I miss being in the Senate. It was a place where I could get stuff done. And I also, sometimes when I watch hearings, I get a little frustrated. During the Jackson hearing, I just wish that my colleagues had been a little tougher on my Democrat colleagues, on the Republican colleagues that I thought were disgraceful. So I miss it. I miss being in that. And, I accomplished a lot when I was there. And, I do miss it.
Well, I suspect they still think of you as Senator Franken in Minneapolis and across Minnesota. I know I still do at times. Al, how did your experience as a humorist, as a writer for SNL, did that prepare you well for politics?
Well, I thought it would. But what I learned was that when when I decided to run, and it was against Norm Coleman for Paul Wellstone's seat. I was a friend of Paul's. I thought that SNL was going to be like a feather in my cap. And it turned out the people of Minnesota really didn't see the connection between comedy and the U.S. Senate. And if anything, it was sort of my comedy was used against me. I'll give you a couple, like one of the first interviews I had with the press was a guy said to me, when you were at SNL, did you ever do cocaine? And I said, well, yes, but only a little. And just so that I could stay awake long enough to make sure that Belushi didn't do too much. Now, most people like you recognize that last part as a joke, but this guy wrote it up as Al Franken conceded that while at Saturday Night Live, he did cocaine, but said he only did a little so that he could stay awake late enough to make sure that cast member John Belushi didn't do too much. Belushi later died of a drug overdose. Now, that was sort of I learned that the press really has a vested interest in not getting jokes, right? So everything I ever had done was put through the dehumorizer. And so it was a real challenge. But Minnesotans, I think, kind of got it, actually. I had written a magazine article in like the late 90s warning parents that they should monitor what their kids were getting online. But I wrote it satirically. So I said, my son did a great fourth grade report last week on bestiality, and the kids in his class just loved it. He downloaded a lot of great visual aids, and the kids in the class just loved them. And so that was written up, you know, Al Franken helped his son prepare a report on bestiality. And so Chuck Schumer, who is head of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, said, oh, well, you know, Al has too much baggage. It's going to hurt him. And so we had to do, like, focus groups to see if this really was. And so, you know, when you do that, your pollster, like, ask questions like, you know, if you knew Al Franken told jokes about bestiality, would you be more likely to vote for him or less likely?
How did that focus test? What did the voters think of bestiality jokes, if I may ask, sir?
Well, they would say less likely then, but then we would explain what the context was, and it turned out Minnesotans got irony and satire. And so I was able to convince especially Harry Reid that this wasn't really a problem. And I won. I clobbered Coleman by 312 votes, as you may remember.
I recall, yes, sir. Devil's Advocates Radio, fine guest Al Franken, former senator from the great state of Minnesota. He's on tour, Madison, coming to the Barrymore Theater this Friday night. Perhaps a few tickets still available. Call the Barrymore box office if you'd like to see his stand-up. Al, I got to tell you, one of the first books of yours I read, Rush Limbaugh is a big fat idiot. He has left the right-wing talk radio sphere. Al, you were a lefty talker. You were part of the original Air America lineup, and you're beloved here in Madison. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've carried on that legacy here. I'm the station owner. I'm the little progressive station that could here in Madison, Wisconsin. Al, progressive radio, what do you think its place is in the media landscape? Understanding that, you know, behind Rush Limbaugh, there are hundreds of other righty-whitey talkers ready to go and step up and tell the new lies. Al, does left-wing talk radio have a place in this landscape?
Well, you know, Air America kind of, you know, shot itself in the foot, like, right out of the starting gate because we just had no money. And so we didn't have strong signals in a lot of cities. For example, in Minneapolis, the signal was not particularly strong. And, but also we didn't have money for billboards or any kind of advertising. And the guy who started the thing kind of misled everybody about how much money he had. And And if you think about like Fox News or something like that, they had billions of dollars to get going, right? And I think that's part of it. I don't know if just by nature, people who drive around, you know, that the Rush Limbaughs, the Sean Hannitys, all those people, and then all the local versions of them, if there's some appeal about the spewing that these right-wing talk show hosts does, that is, you know, people love to get agitated, and we've just seen it. The whole reason for Rush Limbaugh's a big fat idiot and other observations and lies and lying liars who tell them was I was saying that the right wing was disseminating disinformation and then it was dangerous. And I don't know what's happened to that.
Yeah, right. Fortunately, oh, yeah, that's all ended. Right. Nothing but the truth from the right now, Al.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And it's, you know, when I did Lies and Lying Liars, people were going like, you can't call people liars. And I went like, well, they're lying. And now everyone calls everybody else a liar all the time. But it's gotten worse and worse, hasn't it? And of course a lot of that's social media, and but it's all very, very dangerous.
Al Franken, former U.S. senator from the great state of Minnesota. People are listening there right now. If you are in Madison or the area and you'd like to see Al Franken, come to the Barrymore Theater this Friday night. Perhaps a few good seats still available, but you better call the Barrymore Theater box office. Al, final thoughts. We got like 45 seconds. Ted Cruz, any final thoughts on Ted Cruz?
Are you guys on in Detroit?
What's that, sir? No, not Detroit. Chicago, Minneapolis, and Wisconsin primarily, sir.
Okay, going to be in Detroit the following night. But Cruz, I have a whole Ted Cruz section in the show. I've always said that I probably like Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues like Ted Cruz, and I hate Ted Cruz.
Al, I second that emotion, sir. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Devil's Advocates. Hope to see you Friday night at the Barrymore Theater. Thank you. Have a great show.
Come back. Come back safe. Okay, Mike. Bye.
Thank you.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal. Only politics.
I know what the lace. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Want to thank our most recent guest, the fine one, former U.S. Senator Al Franken. You know him. You love him. In fact, he has sold out the show at the Barrymore Theater this Friday night. We've gotten word from the box office. No more tickets. So I'm sorry. I don't mean to dangle out the fine stand-up of Al Franken and not give you a means of access, but we appreciate it. And apparently he's got a show Saturday night in Detroit, D-Town. Maybe Dom and you could road trip. Let him know. Call us, 844-967-2789. We'll coordinate the travel, if you know what I'm saying. Coming up in the next big hour, we've got Charles Franklin. He is a pollster extraordinaire. I'm trying to think what he used to be. Well, he's always been a pollster extraordinaire. He's a friend of ours. Hopefully that's a current tense. So anyways, Charles Franklin coming up at 4:30. New polling out in the great state of Wisconsin. I'll just give you a tease. It is a hell of a horse race suddenly in the U.S. senatorial race on the Democratic side. We've seen movement, and Alex Lazary has nearly caught the front runner, who is Mandela Barnes, if you're not from the state of Wisconsin. Now, we've been watching this race very closely. I had one of the fine candidates, U.S. Senator or senatorial candidate Sarah Godlewski, in studio with me on Monday. I had Lazary very recently. I mean, hell, we had Mandela very recently, and we had Tom Nelson very recently. And technically, we had Peter Pekarsky, also a candidate, very recently. Godlewski's moved up slightly. She spent about $1 million. Lazary has spent something like $4.4 million, and he's closed the gap. It's like three, according to the new polling. But 6%, something like that, 6% plus margin of error. The number of Democrats polled, you know, by the time you take this sample and you break it down into Dems and Republicans, gets to be a relatively small sample. But I got to think, Lazary's team's probably doing cartwheels right now. And, you know, if I was Corey and the boys and girls running the Mandela Barnes for U.S. Senate campaign, I'd be a little nervous. And, you know, if I was Godlewski's campaign, I'd take some heart in the fact that, you know, at least they moved up slightly since the last poll. I hope $1 million got a few people's notice. And Tom Nelson, you know, Tom's probably there in the first tier. But then there's like seven other candidates, and it could be a jumbled mess because like half the people surveyed, half the people polled didn't even have a strong preference. So you take, you know, the just the Dem voters, and then you say, who's your favorite? And approximately half of them said, I haven't made up my mind yet. So, you know, take that polling for what it's worth. But Charles Franklin, the fine pollster, joins me at 4:30. But I want to tell a little story from my backyard about a woman who's suddenly become Big Lie Becky, Rebecca Clayfish. She is a Republican candidate, and she's currently the big front runner in the newest polling out of Wisconsin. Three plus Becky in the race. The newest entrant into the Republican field is a 100 millionaire, billionaire kind of Republican sort of self-funder. Think Donald Trump sort. His family owns, ironically, a big construction company. Tim Michaels, his name. And as I was booking our pal Charles Franklin to join me on this big show, he said, damn it, Michaels joined the race too late. So he is not reflected in the polling that currently has Clayfish way ahead of her opponents, Kevin Nicholson, whose only claim to fame, as near as I can tell, is he's got a sugar daddy, a U-line of the U-lines, and Tim Ramjam, who's in Rantham, whose entire electoral platform is, let's overturn the last election. And they do have some very specific polling about people's confidence in the last election. And, oh, yeah, the April election and the Gableman investigation. So we'll get there in the next hour. But I want to talk about Big Lie Becky Clayfish. Here's the headline at the Journal Sentinel. Remember, she's the front runner. With no evidence, Rebecca Clayfish, Wisconsin candidate for governor, well, she's now saying the 2020 election was rigged. Did you have to, Becky? Republican candidate for governor Rebecca Clayfish is escalating her criticism of how the last presidential election was carried out in Wisconsin, calling it rigged, a rigged contest, despite rulings and recounts confirming the outcome. The characterization comes as a fourth candidate enters the Republican primary with the ability to pour millions into his campaign and a backstory that could appeal to the head of the party, former President Donald Trump. Ooh, what if Trump endorses? That could change everything. Now, 17 months after the 2020 election, grievances over its outcome loom over Wisconsin's 2022 races as Trump continues to pressure Republicans to keep hope alive. Well, to keep alive his false claims of widespread fraud to maintain momentum for his expected 2024 campaign for president. And recounts, court rulings, state audits, and a study by a prominent conservative group have confirmed President Joe Biden. Breaking news, Becky. President Joe Biden won Wisconsin in 2020 by nearly 21,000 votes. None of the reviews have shown fraud manipulated the outcome of that election. You know, like even the Republicans that actually did the audits and stuff here in the state of Wisconsin didn't find any fraud. Anyways, Big Lie Becky Clayfish on Tuesday compared decisions made by Wisconsin's elections officials to navigate the coronavirus pandemic to those of NFL quarterback Tom Brady in 15 when he was accused of deflating footballs to gain an advantage for the New England Patriots in a playoff game. I often compare this to Deflategate, Clayfish said in a Tuesday interview on WTAQ. They won the game. Did they win legitimately? Did they replay the game? These are the questions we are facing right now at the highest level of governance, she said. I can't honestly tell you the results in Pennsylvania and in Arizona and other states where there are questions. There's not really any other states where there are questions, Rebecca. They even did the cyber ninja audit in Arizona. So that's a disingenuous statement as well. I just point that out. But here's the rest of her quote. I'm focused exclusively on Wisconsin. And what I can tell you about Wisconsin is that it feels like it was rigged. It feels like it was rigged. Now, that's the Republican frontrunner for governor of the state of Wisconsin. And her current tenor is, yeah, probably rigged. She went on to say something to the effect that, you know, this Tim Michaels, this rich guy that jumped into the race, well, he apparently doesn't believe it's rigged. Here is what this article says. Clayfish says candidates who don't address the 2020 election should be disqualified in voters' minds, referring to Tim Michaels. That's the rich guy, a wealthy construction executive from Waukesha County who entered the race last week. Michaels held a rally Monday to launch his campaign for governor and did not mention the last presidential election in his nine-minute speech. But he did go down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring in the ass, if you know what I'm saying. And I believe he also probably believes it's a rigged election, but he can't prove it. None of them can.